thought for today. Releasing a big fish is more satisfying than eating it. Ever thought about that? Releasing a big fish is more satisfying than eating it. Releasing a big fish is more satisfying than eating it. My father was an avid fisherman. He would come home from his work in the city, and he'd drive all the 30 miles out to Eagle Lake, Eagle Springs Lake. And the car would go along about maybe 40 miles an hour at top speed, and he would cruise on out there. And supper wouldn't be ready yet. So he'd take the big tin war tub that we called it. He made a boat out of tin with flotations under the back seat and the middle seat and front seat. And it was a long old boat. And he'd get in there, he'd go out, go fishing. And he'd fish and he'd fish and he'd fish. He's a good fisherman too. But there were days that he would come in with no fish. And we'd think to ourselves, now, why is it that he's coming in with no fish? We have plenty to eat. It's not that we need the fish to eat, but the fish were always good to eat too. But he would come in with no fish, and there were times that we had our little canoe and we had our other boats and we were skidding around the lake and going here and there, and we'd have him in sight because we'd see him over there fishing. And occasionally we'd see him pulling in a nice big fish. We think to ourselves, wow, that's a big one. Because we were curious about what our dad was doing all the time. And so then we'd see him throw the fish back in the water. Now, this was a big old lake in Wisconsin, and it was back in the 40s, 30s, 40s, and there weren't too many rules. And you could catch fish and catch little fish. My Uncle Bill used to take a seine out. A seine is a sieve, you know, a big net. And then he would have one of us kids hold the net on one end and he'd hold the other end. And then we'd go like this toward the shore and then up with the net. And then we'd catch all these little fish. They were about, you know, an inch or two long. And Uncle Bill was a very lazy person, basically. And so he'd take these fish and he'd put them into a bucket. And then he'd take them in to Aunt Gussie, and he'd say, her name was Augustine, you know, he'd say, Gussie, here's my dinner. So she would have the frying pan hot by the time he came in, because she knew. And she would take all those fish right out of the bucket, without cleaning them, without scraping the scales off, without gutting them, without any, and she'd fry them in the frying pan for him. I mean, they're too small to do anything with, really. Just an inch or two, and sometimes a little longer. And then she'd make a whole plateful of fish like that for him, two or three plateful. And he would sit there eating them all, you know, straight on down after they were fried. And it didn't matter to him that the insides were there, because he just passed it on through. Well, now, he was the other end of the spectrum. He ate anything. He was a big fellow too, and but he was wonderful, Uncle Bill. My dad would throw the fish back, because my dad went fishing for a different reason. My dad went out to go fishing, not to catch the big fish, which he did catch many times, but he went out to catch time for meditation. I didn't think of it at that time. I hadn't any idea that that was what he was doing. It's only in later years that I realized what he was doing, because when I went out and sat in the boat without fishing, just to meditate, to be away from the family, to be away from everybody, just to be on my own, nobody disturbs while you're fishing, because you have to be very quiet while you're fishing. And so I would sit out in the boat there with a pole hanging over the edge with nothing on it, and it's just a time for meditation, a time for peace. Well, I rather think that's what my father did too. He sat out there and meditated, because his business was doing exceedingly well. and he was having tremendous opportunities to grow very quickly. The war and all those other things that came along to increase his business activity, increase his dedication to the business, but he maintained the outer business. My uncle maintained the inner business. My uncle created, they were Byerly brothers, they were working together. And so my uncle would handle the industries and businesses in developing them. My dad would handle the residential and the parks and things like that, and building golf courses and building things, you know, that he liked very much. And but basically it was private homes, big private homes for big moneyed people, because it was quite something. So when he changed his focus from building homes because he loved building them to building homes because there was so much work to do, he had to keep very busy, he lost a bit of his focus on himself. He would come rushing home, and we'd go out to the lake cottage, and he'd rush out into the boat and look for that time of meditation. And he'd keep throwing those big fish back, because if he had too many big fish, he knew he had to go in and get ready for supper. But he'd keep throwing them back, and he'd be looking for that meditation. Releasing the big fish is more satisfying than eating it, from the point of view, if you really are releasing them, that's great. Now, I would imagine in my father's early years, as he'd released the fish, he'd released the fish because he was thinking, you're a big boy, you know. We shouldn't really catch you. You've lived so long in the lake here, and you've done so well, you know, we shouldn't really stop your long life. And so he'd catch the middle-sized fish. The middle-sized fish were all right, because they hadn't proven to themselves how long they could grow, or whatever his philosophy may have been. But, you see, letting the big fish go, it takes somewhat of a special attitude of mind to do that. Can you let the big fish go in your life? Can you let these things go that that might seem so precious to you? What do they have? They have big fisheries, ice fisheries and lake fisheries, and there's always at the local bar around the lake a contest going on. Who catches the biggest fish? And so, of course, they'd come in and drink their beer and tell about their big fish that they caught. And they'd show the fish, too. And so the fish would be measured. Sometimes the fishes were really tremendous, and they'd take them to the taxidermist, and they'd put them up on the wall. But whenever you'd walk into the lake, into the bar, and you'd see these fish up on the wall, you think to yourself, why couldn't they just let them be? I mean, they're not going to eat them. They think it's so wonderful to catch this big fish. They think it's so wonderful to catch this giant of the water, this giant of the lake, one who has lived so long, having escaped the fisherman's hook over the years. Let him live a little longer. Let him go on a little longer. Let him go on and be themselves and have fun. But no, we have to get credit for something that we didn't do. Credit for just pulling up a fish which happens to be big is no big deal. And yet your name goes up on the plaque along with the fish, and it says, John caught this giant fish on January 1st. And big deal. Big deal. And Mary caught this big fish. Sylvia and I were having our meditation together at the Santee Lake. And we were sitting in the motorhome talking together and having her private time and doing some good thinking together. And as we sat there, we looked out the window at the lake, and there are people sitting around the lake in their chaise lounges, you know, with their fish line in the lake, waiting for a fish to come along. Well, this one woman was a very active woman. She was walking here and walking there and walking here and walking there. She had different lines in. And then she'd pull in a fish a giant fish. And she'd show it to everyone, say, look, see, look, here, isn't that wonderful? See? Then she would go to her friend, and she'd take the fish, the hook out of the mouth, and throw them back in the water. Everybody say, my goodness sakes, you know, what's all this about? You can just hear them saying it even though they were far away. What's this crazy lady throwing the big fish back? Well, now, there were maybe 50 people around that lake fishing. 50 people were pulling in fish. Which one of those 50 people do you remember? You remember this lady throwing the fish back. And you think to yourself, wow, what a noble lady. What a fantastic lady who has the capacity to throw the fish back. She caught the fish because theoretically she wanted to. Yes, but that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to just catch the fish because it was a time of genius. It was a time of saying, okay, fish, come to my hook. Bite on my hook. Lots of other people, the fish weren't even biting on their hooks. They had the same lures, they had the same worms, the same grasshoppers, the same things that they put on their bait for their on their hook, and nothing came. But this woman, she just went up and down to her different poles and pulled them in just like they're seining for fish. But she threw them back. It's as though the fish knew that they would get back if they got on her line. What do you do? What do you do? Do you take things just because they're there? Or is releasing it much more fun than eating it? Think about how you're walking through the woods and your eyes are just soaking in all of the glory of the woods. The beautiful trees, the sunlight beaming down through the leaves, making a pattern on the ground, continuously changing. And you see the buttercups and you see the trilliums. You see all of the crocus and the rosebuds all popping up here and there. And you want to embrace them all. You want to reach down and gather them in your arms and take them with you. But you're not ready to leave the woods yet. You're just beginning your walk. And all the beauty around you is so magnificent, you'd like to embrace it all. That's why painters paint. That's why musicians compose. They want to capture life in their media. And you want to capture life in your media. But your media is not the fish hook. Your media is not the scissors or the knife that cuts off these beautiful trilliums with their lovely fluted leaves and beautiful forest pattern to them. Your medium is your eye. You look with your eyes and you see all of the beauty around you and you just wrap it up in your heart and you just snuggle in it and you think it's so wonderful. How many times have you laid down in a field of grass, short or tall, it doesn't matter, and you just roll over in the grass and you feel so wonderful. And you look up at the heavens and you see the clouds going by and you see all of the different shapes and forms that they take. Have you ever laid out in a field on a warm summer afternoon and all of a sudden a summer rain comes and trickles down on you? Do you run for cover? I can't be in the field when it's raining. It might be lightning shame. Ah. You lay down there and the rain falls on you. It feels cool at first, but then on your skin it feels very pleasant. And you lay there and the water is trickling down your face. And you are like merging with the soil because it's sort of bonding you with the grass and the soil beneath you. You can't take that fish and let it go, because now that fish is in your heart. But nature continues. And when you have the summer rain end, and you stand up, and you start to walk, and then the gentle summer breeze and the beautiful sun dries your clothing and dries you as you walk along, You just feel glorious. You don't think about your clothes being wrinkled because they're not. You don't think about yourself being stained with the grass because you're not. You don't think about yourself having dust or dirt on you from your journey. As the masters of the Far East would say, they cannot conceive how one speck of God's substance would cling to another speck of God's substance unless it was wanted there. That's the big fish. Releasing the big fish is more fun than eating it. And this is something that's true for all of us. Releasing the big fish is much more fun than eating it. When we can work with young people and we can share with them knowledge, wisdom, values, and then we see them go out and live using that knowledge and wisdom, using those values, that's the big fish that got away. We don't try to impress upon others, young people especially, our values. We live them. We live them. If someone tries to take advantage of them, of us, and there are other people around us, young people especially, we don't say, "Hey, you can't take advantage of me. You can't walk on me like that. You can't do this." We say, "Excuse me, sir. What is it you'd like?"
"Well, about you."
"Okay, you go right ahead." And then the little kid looks up at you. "What did you let them walk on you?" "I didn't let them walk on me. They walked on themselves. I was merely here doing my own thing. And I'm not going to ever be emotionally touched by what other people's attitudes are. I'm just being me."
"But you let them walk on you."
"No. No one can walk on you unless you let them. And I didn't let them. I was just me. And I am not a person who's going to fight these people. I love them."
"But they wanted to take your fishing pole. They wanted to take your fishing spot. They wanted to do all these things."
"Everything belongs to God. They cannot take anything from me that does not belong to them. They may take it for a moment, but you will find it lying by the side of the road as you walk along, and you will find that it never really was taken. Agree with your adversary quickly and watch how they become your friends. Someone come up to you and want to walk all over you, and you say, 'Hey, what can I do to help you? Am I in your way? I'm sorry. What can I do to help you? Have I done something to offend you? How can I mend the way?'" The moment you agree with your adversary quickly, you're not letting the big fish go away. You're making the big fish work for you. And the big fish is your attitude. The big fish is your ability not to be touched by the appearances of the world around you. Not to be touched by the thought that you think something is wrong, something is bad, something is being done against you. Let it go. Let it go. We were watching Smoke Signal, this movie about these two Indian boys. And one Indian boy was stoic, and the other Indian boy was sort of a young genius that was totally uninhibited. And so he would say to the stoic boy, whose father ran away, he'd say, "Why did your father leave you?" I mean, that's a heavy hurt statement to make. But he didn't mean it as a hurt. He meant it, "Why did your father leave you?" And the stoic answered back, "He didn't leave me. But he went away." "Yeah, but he didn't leave me." You see, we saw as the father left that he hugged his son, and he let his son know in every possible way that he loved him very dearly. But he had to go for whatever reason. And so the son had the perfect opportunity to say the father didn't leave him. The father took the bus and went away. It's not that the father was dead or anything like that, but he wasn't available. He let the big fish get away. He let his father go. But that didn't mean he didn't love him. When we can allow this to happen, as Rita was telling us here about Anita and herself and the experiences that they had in the cafe, the experiences they had on the bus, the experiences they had in the store. Anita, years ago, would have said, "Hey, I'm Anita, pay attention to me, and that's Rita. And I mean, we're two different people, and you, we're wonderful, we're two different." But now, she could sit back in smiling repose and watch as people misunderstood who was who, and it didn't matter. She knew who she was. Her sister knew who she was. They didn't have to prove anything. They just let it go. And they were amused as each one was being addressed improperly. But the greatest amusement, the greatest befuddlement, was when Anita was addressed as Anita, as an individual, as herself, by the store clerk. Though the store clerk didn't mention her name, she said, "Oh, how long are you in town this time?" And it was a respect of individuality. And Anita didn't have to have it, but she just played along comfortably with it, recognizing it, not making a big fuss over it. "Well, finally there's somebody who knows me as me. Finally there's somebody who doesn't know my identical twin sister as me, you know, or me is my identical twin sister." You see, when we fight for our right, we generally lose it. When we live for ourselves, we win, period. Whenever we fight for something that we think is so necessary for us, then we lose. But when we just live it, then we win. They say if a mugger comes up and wants to take your money, give it to him. And you cannot lie. A mugger somehow knows when you're lying. And if you say to him, "Here's my money," and in your shoe you have a couple hundred dollars, or somewhere else in a pocket you have some more money, you broadcast that to the mugger, that you have withheld from him something. And so he may not find that money, he may not be intuitive enough to know that all he has to do is ask for more. So he takes his fist or his club and he whomps you, because you lied. Now, who is the bad person there? Who is the evil person? The mugger or you? The mugger is doing what he believes is right. He believes it's perfectly okay to take things from others. You have been raised never to lie. Jesus, that rather unusual person that people have come to worship, but pay no attention to what he says. Jesus said, if someone comes and takes your cloak, give him your coat also. If someone comes and strikes you, turn your cheek and let them strike the other side too. Be not possessed by anything you have, but agree with your adversary quickly. Flow with it. Now, why did he say, if they take your cloak, give them your coat? Because in those days, they didn't have closets. They didn't. And they wore all their clothes, basically. If a man had two pair of pants, he wore two pair. If he had a shirt, or two shirts, or four shirts, he wore all four of them. They must have been quite warm, or insulated, one or the other. But that was the custom.
And the people didn't have much in those days. Why did they say of Jesus he had this seamless cloak? That's all he had. He had nothing else. This is why he said, if they take it, give it to him. Give it to him. What was the scene around the cross, the biggest scene around the cross? It was the soldiers playing craps for the seamless robe of Jesus. Interesting, huh? Very interesting. Give the big fish back. He gave the robe back. Can you give anything that you have back without claiming it and just be yourself and have fun? You can. And when you do, miracles begin to happen in your life. Can you let the big fish go? Or do you have to get credit for having caught the big, big fish? Can you let someone else get credit for something that you did and not feel anything in your heart other than, hey, I did it, I know I did it, and that's enough. If he wants to get the credit for what I did, that's fine. He'll pay the penalty for taking credit for something he didn't do. You know, that's true. I told you the stories of when I was on my ship during the Second World War, and we were out in the South Pacific. And the captain, because I worked with him, he always would say, Barley, go do this, go do that. You know, whatever you wanted done. And he'd say, make a special in-out thing for the officers so I know when they're here and when they're not here, they can check out. So I went down to the metal shop and the woodworking shop, and I started to make these things. And as I was clumsily working on them, because I'm not an artisan in that field, the artisans turned to me and they said, what are you doing? And I said, well, the captain said he wanted this made, so I'm making it. Well, move aside, let me do this. And he would do it perfectly. He did it so perfectly. I mean, I wished that I would do it so perfectly. And then he gave it to me. He says, okay, now take this to the captain, but don't tell him I did it. Tell him you did it. I don't want the captain sending down work for me. And so I went to the captain, and I said, Captain, here it is. And he said, Barley, I can always depend on you to do things. I said, I had help, but it worked out great. He says, you did this all by yourself. I know it. And I said, whatever you say, sir. You know. But I told him the truth. And he chose to think otherwise. You see, when you let the big fish get away, the joy in your heart, the feeling in your heart, the feeling of success for yourself is far greater than any big fish you'd ever take home. Because I had this story from the captain and from the crew and so forth of our ship that I'll never forget. It was wonderful. But I created it. And you create these kind of things too. Let go of the credit. You don't need it. Let go of the claim to fame for having done something great and wonderful and noble. Just always do things great and wonderful and noble and enjoy life to its fullest, because you deserve to enjoy life to its fullest, because you're wonderful. And I love you very much.